Welcome, everybody. This afternoon's lecture is part of our 50th anniversary exhibition programming, which will continue tomorrow and Saturday with our symposium, American School, American Art and Pedagogy, funded by the Henry Luce Foundation, and featuring the voices of preeminent artists and scholars of American art, including Fred Wilson, who will give the keynote address here in Given Auditorium at 6 p.m. I hope you'll be able to join us. Tonight, it's my pleasure to introduce paintings conservator Nina Roth Wells, whose work was vital to the 50th anniversary exhibition, now on view in the museum, and the accompanying catalog, and whose professional insights have greatly deepened our knowledge of our collection. Ms. Roth Wells received her BA from Bowdoin College, where she majored in art history and French, and her Master of Art Conservation degree from Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. She is an instructor at Colby College, where she teaches an Introduction to Art Conservation and Preservation course each January. And she is the chief conservator and owner of a firm specializing in conservation of paintings and frames. Her talk is titled, Preparing the Colby College Collection for its 50th Anniversary, a Talk on Paintings Conservation.
Hello. What am I doing wrong?
I'll just take this moment to mention that this talk will be followed by a tour of the collection, and also we have snacks in the museum lobby, so I hope you can come to that as well.
Hi, everyone. And since we're sort of a small group, if you have a question during the talk, go ahead and raise your hand, and I'll try to answer it. And it would be wonderful if after the talk, if you want to take a quick tour through the collection, all of the works that I worked on are in this talk, but I can point out some of the other works that are in the collection that I did work on that are on view right now. I tried to highlight the most interesting treatments. Okay.
Can you turn down a bit the sound?
I can't, but someone else can. Is that better? I can move this away, too.
You know, we never use the mic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think they want it because they think they're recording it. Yeah. I'll try not to project, okay? Okay, so firstly, I'd like to thank the staff of the Colby College Museum of Art for inviting me here today to share with you my wonderful experiences working on this collection. As a conservator in private practice, I rarely get the opportunity to work with collections over an extended period of time. So the year and a half that I spent working on this collection was a real opportunity for me. Not only is this a wonderful, vibrant collection, but the staff at this museum is a treasure. Unfortunately, most of them are not here tonight to hear the nice things about them, but I have never worked with such a helpful and cooperative group of people at a museum before. Patricia was my brain and command center throughout the project. Greg and Stru were the best, helping me with every step of the way, from carrying heavy art objects to helping me mix difficult paint colors. The curators, Beth and Lauren, were great, and they schlepped downstairs often to answer questions and render opinions about treatments. And of course, none of this would have been possible without Sharon's support. And anyone who has worked with Karen knows that she is the most organized and efficient woman in the world. You could send her an invoice and the check would be in the mail the next day. Okay. So, in preparation for the 50th anniversary exhibition of the paintings, we really started working on this project, I'd say, in the spring of 2007. So it was a long project. So before we go detailed about what I did at Colby, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about what art conservation is. So this is the definition that the national organization called the American Institute of Conservation gives us for what art conservation is. The profession devoted to the preservation of cultural property for the future. Conservation activities include examination, documentation, treatment, preventive care supported by research, and education. So what do conservators do? Part of conservation is examination, documentation, preventive care, and preventive conservation. and treatment, which is stabilization and restoration. Today, my talk will focus on treatment. Preventive conservation is a very important aspect of conservation, but that is more what museums do and conservators do to create an environment to keep the art stable and healthy without actually treating the art. And I just wanted to say that without good documentation, I would not be able to give presentations like this because I would not have all the written documentation to remind me of what I did and all the photo documentation to share with you some of these great images. So examination is the most important and first step to any treatment. When you examine a painting, you have to look at the whole painting, and this includes the reverse as well as the paint layers in the images. And after careful examination of the reverse of this painting in the collection, which is the Lost Sheep or Lost Lamb by N.C. Wyeth, I discovered there was an inscription on the back of the painting that read "The Lost Sheep." It's difficult to see. The inscription is right about in this area. And this is a close-up of where it says sheep. So that's just one of the interesting aspects of examination that one would not recognize if one didn't look at the painting as a whole and take into account the structure of the painting, including the reverse of the canvas and the stretcher. So documentation, it's pretty straightforward. It's the recording in a permanent format of information derived from conservation activities. This is an example of documentation for a treatment I did not for Colby, but for our private client. And you can see there is written documentation and photo documentation. A lot of us are switching to digital media for our documentation, and this will provide us with challenges in the future. So I always print out a hard copy of both the written documentation and the photo documentation. Any of you who have an old computer know that it's very hard to access old files that are on floppy disks or those blue square disks. So treatment is the deliberate alteration of chemical and or physical aspects of cultural property aimed primarily at prolonging its existence. And treatment may consist of stabilization and or restoration. This slide shows the lost sheep or the lost lamb partially cleaned. Therefore, the treatment is altering the appearance and makeup of the painting by removing grime and discolored varnish. It's difficult to see, but the cleaning line is right along here. This side is clean. And this side still has the discolored grime and varnish on it. One of the goals of treatment is to reveal or reclaim the artist's original intent. Conservators must determine the artist's intent and not try to alter or improve the art with what we think the way it should look. And that is a distinction between conservators and restorers. Conservators are bound by a code of ethics to interpret original artistic intent, bring that back to what we think our best guess of what the artist's original intent was, but not add anything. So for example, it wasn't the artist's original intent for the varnish to yellow. So the colors in this painting have changed. So I, during my treatment, have altered its actual state back to its original intent. It's a little bit of a tricky concept, but it's something that we're always trying to work against time and decay and yet not add any of our own ideas about what the art should look like. Stabilization are treatment procedures intended to maintain the integrity of the cultural property and to minimize damage. In this case, this is a facing flaking paint on a French 17th century battle scene in the Colby collection. The slide's for you, Veronique. So right here we are reattaching paint that's flaking to the original support. And in these definitions, you'll see that we're using the term cultural property and not art. And these are for the whole profession as a whole, not just for painting conservators, these definitions, but cultural property is a way of describing all of the important aspects of the past. So cultural property would include ethnographic objects, monuments, things like Stonehenge and the Magna Carta, dinosaur bones. So conservation is, although I'm a painting conservator and I focus on fine art, conservation is a field that also helps to preserve natural history objects, monuments, and art. So cultural property is a catch-all phrase for all of those different objects. So restoration, treatment procedures intended to return cultural property to a known or assumed state, often through the addition of non-original material. So in my case, that known or assumed state goes along with what I believe the artist's original intent would be. So in this slide, this is not a frame in the Colby collection, but I think it illustrates the point really well. In this slide, you can see this. I recast that leaf off another part of the frame. That's a plaster cast that I added, and then here it's toned gold to match the surround. So this is a restoration, and that particular ornament on the frame was not structural in any way. It's purely decorative, but in order for the object to be returned to its original intent, you need to add that material, thus restoring it. And here's an example of a treatment that involved both stabilization and restoration, and most treatments do. The flaking paint has been consolidated so that it adheres to the support, and the losses have been inpainted to match surrounding image in accordance with the artist's original intent. That's this is also a paint, one of those 17th century French Baroque battle scenes. So now we're gonna sort of focus back in on Colby. And the conservation plan for the 50th anniversary was, first the curator selected the works of art that they wanted to be in the exhibition, and then the registrar, Patricia King, and I met to assess the condition of the work. So the first couple days that I worked here, we were literally walking through the storage and the exhibition halls and saying, well, that one's gonna be in the 50th anniversary exhibition, what does it need? Which is really, it was a really great experience. It's really fun to sort of shop the whole collection to see what it needs. And then the works were divided into treatments that could be performed on-site at Colby, and these were sort of less complicated treatments, and then treatments that had to be performed at my studio because they either were of very important works or the treatment was just complicated, not something that I could do here. I needed more equipment, more time, or the materials needed to dry over a long period of time. So this is a view of my studio. And the three treatments that I'm going to be focusing on that I performed in my studio are Charles Knowles' The Panic of 1869, Meditation by Marie Cassatt, and The Lost Sheep by N.C. Wyeth. So this is an after-treatment picture of The Panic of 1869 by Charles Knowles. The case study of this treatment of this wonderful painting by Charles Knowles was one of the most interesting facets of working on this painting, that I started this painting last summer before the global economic meltdown. So I had an eerie feeling while working on this painting that life was imitating art. This painting depicts Black Friday, which was a stock market crash on September 24th of 1869. This treatment was complicated by the fact that the painting had been extensively treated in the past. So a lot of what I did initially was to examine and analyze what the former treatment was. And then I went on to do cleaning and stabilization of this painting. So remember, this is after treatment. This is before treatment on that first walkthrough in Colby storage. And I apologize for the fuzziness, but the slide on the right are the actual swabs from the cleaning test that I did. So that black one is the dirt, and that sort of brownish yellow one is the varnish. So many paintings have both a grime layer and a varnish layer on them. Sometimes these layers are very distinct, that they're soluble in different things, and you can take off the grime and then take off the varnish. Sometimes they're sort of mixed together, and you need to take them off together. But this painting had the distinct grime layer, and it was probably soot from coal-based heating, and then a discolored varnish. This is before treatment, under a little better lighting conditions in my studio. And the main concerns were discoloration of the surface from grime, varnish, and overpaints, and flaking and insecure paint. This is before treatment, again, using ultraviolet light. And the black or dark purple areas represent overpaint. For some reason, many of the highlights in this painting were overpainted, probably due to difficulty with cleaning. So I'm going to use, I know it's hard to see, but I'm going to use the pointer to sort of outline some of these areas that are overpaint. So those dark purple blobs there, this dark purple area around the book, can everybody see that, how it's a dark opaque purple? Okay. This is the only scientific part of the lecture, ultraviolet light. So when UV light collides with an object, the shorter wavelengths of ultraviolet light bounce off areas on the surface of the object. The longer wavelengths of visible light penetrate deeper into the object. Therefore, the ultraviolet light enhances the surface of objects. And it enhances things that can be difficult to see in visible light, or things that are not at all visible in visible light. So again, that's my thumb, but this is a close-up. And actually, I took this picture in visible light, with ambient visible light and ultraviolet light, so it would be an exposure that's a little bit easier to see. But you can only do that really close-up because the visible light is so bright that you won't be able to get. So those purple patches are the overpaints, and they are absorbing ultraviolet light, and then reflecting it back at us, so that's why they're purple. And then this, I apologize for the fuzziness, I took this off the internet, but this shows the visible light spectrum and then the ultraviolet spectrum, and that is a representation of the wavelength. So if you imagine, these are the ultraviolet wavelengths. So what they do is they go very, very rapidly, and then they hit something on the surface and bounce back. Whereas the visible lights, if you think of, they sort of coast in a little bit slower, and they illuminate things that are a little bit further deeper into the surface. That's all the science. So this is, again, that same area with overpaint, showing ultraviolet light and visible light. So here you have the same area. This is overpaint, and this is the overpaint invisible light. So in this case, you can see the overpaint invisible light, but the ultraviolet light helps you to figure out what you're seeing, that it is on the surface, it's overpaint, it's over the original paint. So here we have overpaint invisible light and overpaint in UV light. And you know it's overpaint because you can see this white area goes over the edge of the book here, see? And it also has a very opaque characteristic to it, unlike the original paint that has shadows and highlight and some modeling in it. And then here you can see this is this same area fluorescing in the ultraviolet light. So this is the overpaint removal before and after. The same issue before and after. They actually painted over the edge of the mirror frame. So my hypothesis is that whoever treated this painting in the past had a really difficult time cleaning it. And I don't know why, because I didn't find it difficult to clean. Either they were an artist and they didn't know how to clean paintings, but they knew the painting looked discolored, or they tried to clean it and they couldn't. So what they did instead of cleaning it is they painted in highlights, lighter areas, because they knew, let's say they knew the wall should be brighter, so they painted it in. They knew the edge of the table around the book should be white, so they painted a highlight in. Unfortunately, they covered a lot of original paint in doing this, and they painted in with a very sloppy, opaque, monochromatic palette that really ruined the painting. Covering the what? Yes, it is. Yes. So the craquelure is, as I would say it, is the crack pattern in a painting. And the reason it's, I don't know if it was their intent to cover the crackler, but it's over the, so that's another way. When you see paint that goes over a crack, you know that it was added later, sometimes by the artist. And this is another, this is sort of a, let me go back one. I just think it wasn't old enough to crack. It could crack later. And when you see something like this, when it's so all over the painting, I often think as a conservator, I have to decide, is that artist reworking a canvas or is it overpaint? And in this case, I felt very confident it was overpaint. There was a very thick layer of varnish between the original, and the UV was very distinct it was over so many of the original contours that I felt very confident. There are other cases when I don't feel so confident and I wouldn't take it off. So in painting differs from overpainting and that in that the conservator applies paint only to areas of damage using a very small brush. So you can see in the slides that there are very tiny losses in the green carpet and in the edge of the blue bow. And when I inpainted it, I just took a very tiny brush and just painted in the very tiny dots that were missing. Here, here, and then there you can see there's no little white dots and no little white dots. And this is just a picture of my inpainting palette. For those of you who are artists, the largest brush that I ever use in painting is a No. 2 Sable watercolor brush. And I usually use a 0 or a No. 1, so tiny. And this is just before and after of this painting, just to wrap it up for you. And I assume all of you have seen this painting on view in the collection. So here's a before picture of the Mary Cassatt. Unlike the Panic of 1869, this painting was in very good condition. I just felt that it had a sort of gray and hazy appearance, and I thought that surface cleaning would enhance the painting. And it traveled to my studio in this wonderful case. It's a shadow box that's actually screwed into the case so that it can't jostle around at all. These are pre-treatment photos. Again, looking at the reverse. Details of the reverse. The label actually says, I don't know if you can read it, but it says, Marie Cassatt meditation, and just a close-up of her face. And this is before and after. It's a very subtle change, but I feel that the painting is actually crisper. The contrast was increased a bit, and it really made the painting that is an impressionist painting that a lot of, to me, this painting is really about the colors on her dress and the variation of colors in the background. And I don't think it was working as the artist intended it when it was a little bit dirty. So here we have The Lost Sheep by N.C. Wyeth. The Lost Sheep, or Lost Lamb, was the most comprehensive treatment that I undertook for this project. While the painting was in fairly good condition, the structure was compromised, and the paint was starting to crack and flake. Additionally, surface coating of natural resin varnish was badly discolored. So this is the pre-treatment that I took that day of the walkthrough in Colby Storage, and the other is the pre-treatment at my studio. And here's just a close-up, because it's so pretty. Here's the reverse pre-treatment. The structural treatment of this painting focused on stabilizing the large canvas support. This painting was painted as an illustration, and like many illustration art material, the art materials used were inferior. And that's because it was meant to be reproduced in a book, and the original painting was not seen as important. The stretcher for this painting was very small and too thin and lightweight for a painting of this size. And this is where Lauren and I discussed this a lot, because the original intent was for this to be an illustration. And part of the object is everything it's made out of, the canvas, the stretcher. But we also felt that this is a significant work by N.C. Wyeth, and that it's large. It's about, well, you've seen it, but it's over 4 feet tall. And the stretcher was really, really narrow, and the canvas was torquing on the stretcher, and it really was compromising the stability of the paint layer. So we decided to go whole hog and do a lining and replace the stretcher. So, and here's a detail of that inscription again, lost sheep. And there's some more text here. So the curators and I grappled with this decision as to whether to perform a treatment that would compromise the original intent by removing the original stretcher, or whether it was better to perform a treatment that would prolong the life of the painting. We decided to replace the stretcher with a larger, more heavy-duty stretcher with crossbars and to line the painting. To complicate matters, when I examined the reverse to prepare for a lining, I discovered this inscription, which reads, "The Lost Sheep." After further consultation with curators, we decided that I would photograph the inscription well and that we would include a photo of the inscription on the backing board of the painting, which is what we did. And here's another close-up of the lost sheep. I don't usually have such a great projector, so I put a lot of these in to make sure you can see them, but I feel like I'm beating a dead horse because you can obviously see it. Okay, so this is the treatment of the painting. And the after treatment picture shows a new stretcher, which is wider and has the two crossbars for extra support. In addition, the painting was lined a process where an additional piece of fabric is adhered to the reverse of the painting. And the fabric I use in this case is Sunbrella, which is like an awning material. It's very structurally stable. It's woven and then heat fused into a pattern so that there's no slippage and movement of the threads. You can do a transparent lining. You can't leave a window because that actually sets up a different area where the canvas will bulge, because that area will react differently. We decided not to do transparent lining because it was so large, and the materials that you use for the transparent lining don't come in that wide on the bolt, the fabric. So in painting, this was a loss in the sky, just before and after. And on the head, there were some very minute losses. The other difference in this slide, the reason why the colors are so much more saturated in the post-in painting, is that I put a shinier varnish on, which helps to saturate the colors. And you usually don't do that until the end of the treatment, so that's why it looks so different. So this is pre and then partially cleaned, and again, the cleaning line is right there. And this is post-treatment, with the close-up of the signature. So for the treatments performed on-site at Colby, these were simpler treatments, and these treatments included surface cleaning, in-painting small damages, and then touching up a lot of the frames. This is the mask by Kay Sage. This treatment included surface cleaning to remove grime and grease secretions and in-painting small abrasions. It's a detail of the staining. That's like a grease strip. Over here we have pre-in painting and in painting, a little abrasion on the corner. And I actually did this treatment in the frame. It was a strip frame that was nailed to the painting, and I decided it would be more stressful on the frame and the painting to take it out than warranted for the simplicity of this treatment. That's pre and post. Evening scene by Maurice Denis. This treatment included surface cleaning, consolidation of corners, and in-painting tiny abrasions. This was another really interesting discovery. All is not what it seems. So when you look at the reverse of this painting, it appears to be a cradle panel, and a cradling of these strips. This is very common on Renaissance panels or older panels. It's a treatment that's not really used anymore, but it's a very expensive treatment. It requires someone with a high degree of skill in woodworking to do this. But when I looked at the corners, I noticed that the painting is actually on cardboard. So the painting was this cradle, and this wooden edging was put on the painting, I believe, to sell it as a panel, even though it really is on a cardboard support. And if the loss hadn't been there, you wouldn't be able to tell. So, and then the rest of this treatment really consisted of the cleaning, like I said, and then in painting tiny losses. So a tiny loss there, and it's in painted there. Another tiny loss here, in painted here. The Seacoast View by John Frederick Kensett. And this treatment was surface cleaning and repair of damages to the frame. So this is before, downstairs in storage, after on the wall. And the frame repair, filling in the missing corner here, and then toning it to match with the gold paint to match the surrounding gold area. Christ Portraying Judas by Romare Bearden. This was a more complicated treatment. There was surface cleaning and visual compensation for damage, and then distinguishing damage from original artistic intent. With modern or more abstract art, the artist's intent can become more difficult to interpret. The surface on this painting is very varied, with sketchy lines and splatters of paint. However, there are also small scratches and losses. So when I looked at this painting, it became my job to differentiate between where the artist was using a scumble technique or a splatter technique or a broken line versus where the disfiguring on the surface was paint splatters or where it was grime. And then I in-painted the losses with a very light touch just to break up areas where the contour was disrupted. So this is an example. There's a scratch there, and it's in-painted there. Just very, very slight addition, tiny bits of color just to break up that area. But you can see when you look at the way the hair is rendered or the halo is rendered or all these splatters or this thin area, it gets a little bit hard to tell what is supposed to be there and what isn't. There was a lot of consultation with Beth Finch on this painting about how to treat it, so that was interesting. It's nice for me to have a chance to collaborate with curators. As a conservator in private practice, I work in my studio, and there's no one to say, hey, does this look right, or what do you think about this? So it was really nice to be able to run upstairs and say, come take a look at this. Another similar, there's a long scratch here. And then the other interesting thing is there are the painting is made out of like a piece of masonite or thick board that's then been screwed to a frame. And in many areas, the screw holes are, and when you see in the galleries, you can see this, are he just painted over the screws. And in some areas, the paint has flaked off, and in some areas, it hasn't. But you can really see the screw head. So what I decided was in areas where the paint had flaked off, or the screw was actually disrupting a contour, like it is in the foot, I in-painted it. But there's some other areas where you can see these sort of purple screw heads with little lines in them where I just left it as it was. So this is pre and post. And the screws are all around the edges, like there's one. Sometimes you want to do a lot to treat a painting, but you can't. And in this case, the Laburnum Tree by Ernst Ludwig Kirchner, I tested it, and the paint layers were very sensitive. These blues, greens, are often very sensitive. They're actually usually made up of paint. The pigment is not actual pigment. It's what's called the lake pigment, which means that a dye is precipitated onto a clear particle. And because of that, the paint is much more sensitive. So when you go to clean it, instead of getting a swab with some nice dirt or varnish on it, the swabs were coming up bright blue, bright green. So we decided that the best thing to do would be to try to just take the grime layer off, not take the varnish off, and then to varnish the painting with a little bit of a shinier varnish than normal, because that wets in the colors and increases the contrast. So this is before treatment and after treatment. Sometimes paintings have been treated in the past, and the current treatment has failed. This treatment of Hercules on a funeral pile by Luca Giordano was really interesting because this painting was like an archaeological site. You could see all the former treatments over the past couple hundred years. So there's the original painting and then the many layers of treatments. So the painting was actually lined and patched. So in this case, there was a failure of a former treatment and readhered an existing patch and filled in and painted it. So this is the reverse. This is the lining fabric. That's not the reverse of the original painting. That's the that's a piece of canvas that had been glued onto it. And then in addition to being lined, it was patched. And what happened is this is a very heavy area. And it actually caused a tear along that line on the front of the painting. But I didn't want to undo anything from the past, so I just put this patch, which is, in 100 years, they're going to say they put another patch on top of the, and this is a very lightweight but very strong non-woven textile nylon. I mean, it's very, very thin. It's as thinner than, as thin as paper, but you can't rip it with your hands. It's very, very strong. And then on the front, that's the torn area filled and then in-painted. And then sometimes you come up with just really interesting discoveries. So this painting is George Sutton by Charles Wilson Peale. This is a fingerprint in the painting. It's pretty hard to see, but believe me, it's a fingerprint. And we believe it's the artist's fingerprint that he probably picked up the painting when the painting was still wet. So there's Charles Wilson Peale's fingerprint. If we had another sample of Charles Wilson Peale's fingerprints, this could be somebody's, research project to analyze fingerprints and paints. But yeah, exactly. And then this is just representative of the frame treatments. And I feel like I've in-painted almost every frame in this collection, but there are lots of little white dots where the material has flaked off, and just a little bit of in-painting makes that look whole again. So as the opening of the exhibition neared, there were many last-minute things to take care of. I spent a lot of time toning tiny losses on frame, like the ones in this picture, and as you can see, just a dab of the right color can make the frame look a lot better. So as you see, I did not cover all the paintings that I treat in this talk, but I'd love to show you around the galleries if you'd like. And thank you for your attention. I leave you with this close-up of the Cassatt because it's so beautiful. And I will take questions here and in the galleries if there's time. So are there questions? Okay, Lauren. Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that I didn't cover was that conservators also have to follow the principle of reversibility. So that means that any material I add to the original art has to be a different material and that it can be removed without harming the original. So when I in-paint in a paint system that's based on varnish and solvent instead of oil paint. It actually dries faster than oil paint, and then it can be removed with a very weak solvent that won't harm the original paint. You can also see it in black light and know that it's not the original. The difficult part of that is that it can be very hard to simulate the qualities of oil paint using something else. So I try to, if you're artist, you can think of it as trying to simulate the luminosity of oil paint with a thin watercolor. And if you're not artists, it's like sort of trying to create something that's as thick as toothpaste with something as thin as nail polish. So, are there any other questions? Okay. That's a great question. First, I'm going to differentiate between shellac and varnish. Shellac is a type of a coating that's actually made from grinding up beetles. and it's very orange. There is shellac on paintings occasionally, but more often in the 19th century, they used varnishes that were made from sap and gum of trees, like mastic and Damar varnish. Those varnishes, as they get older, as they age, they turn yellow and they become less transparent. So they become yellow and milky. The varnishes that we use today in conservation are synthetic resin varnishes. They're man-made materials that are made to be as stable as possible. So they do not yellow, they do not become more cloudy, and they also do not lose solubility. The other thing about the varnishes, as they yellow, they become more and more insoluble. So you have to use stronger and stronger solvents to remove them from the paint. So to get back to your question, the reason why I remove varnishes is when they're discolored, and the reason why I add them back is as a protective layer to the painting, and also to wet the painting in. Sometimes paintings look very matte, and they need a varnish to make them look shiny again when you've taken off the original varnish. Any other questions?
I invite you all to come back and have a snack in the museum.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.